listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio, and the programme is Local Media This Week. The show, the Sunday afternoon show, where we have a look at all the local print media, and we're always encouraging people to support the print media here in County Clare. My name is Jim Collins, and I'm joined, as usual, by our panel, and that is John S. Kelly. Good afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Jim.
Pat O'Brien.
Good afternoon, Jim.
And David Fleming. David, you're welcome again.
Happy Easter, Jim.
And thank you very much. And today, for the first time, actually, in this show, we have a special guest, and we're joined by none other than Pádraic McMahon of the Clare Echo. Pádraic, you're very welcome.
Jim, thanks very much for having me. Great to be with you.
You found your way out to our studios in Scariff without any problem.
I did, of course. The Roadworks programme is paying dividends along East Clare.
That's right. Yes, we were reading about that, and we might mention it later on. We'll have top quality roads out here.
Well, hopefully, sure, we might be able to make a few more visits after it anyway.
Very good. And I suppose, Pádraic, just to maybe to go back a couple of weeks, you had your figures with the Clare Echo were outstanding, and rightfully you were highlighting them there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, following a recent audit from ABC in the UK that confirmed that the Clare Echo is the most read paper in County Clare, so we decided we'd do a bit of singing about our good news. So it is confirmed that 15,000 would be our circulation, which equates at about 40,000 people reading the paper. That's print alone. So on top of that, with online, you'd have about 100,000 people. So it's very positive, considering, you know, the newspaper media industry today isn't too particularly healthy. So for us to be going on a upward trajectory is kind of going against the trend, so we're delighted with it at the minute.
And it's really now, I suppose, online in particular, it's the go-to. If something happens during the week, let's say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and something in County Clare, you would go to the Clare Echo website to get the details.
But that's great to hear, and I'm particularly delighted. This show, I think, is fantastic in that it is promoting other media outlets, because I think in other Clare media outlets, it's maybe they just look at their own patch, but I think in fairness to Scariff Bay, you've always been very complimentary and supportive of media outlets like the Clare Echo, so it's very much appreciated by everyone involved with the Clare Echo. And you know, the online takes a lot of work and stuff, but it's good to know that people are kind of going to us as the go-to in that scenario.
Yeah, and of course, last year, when the first lockdown happened, ye had no print media for a good number of weeks. Ye were confined to online.
Confined to online, and thankfully came back after a period of weeks, but the way that panned out, we started daily COVID-19 updates on the figures and stuff, and I don't think anyone thought we'd be doing it over 365 days later. So the figures have grown online because of COVID. We've nearly upped what we would be doing online typically, but you know, I've seen there the Irish Examiner last week have started a paywall online. So I think, you know, the future is probably subscriptions online for services like that. And I think any paid outlet has to be charging for their content online. Otherwise, there's no point buying the paper, and then you can read half the paper online for free. Yeah. So I think young people in particular was mentioned beforehand that they're not buying newspapers, but they are subscribing to subscriptions. Like the Second Captain's World Service, they do audio podcasts. They're absolutely fantastic, and they have a huge audience online. And they did the brilliant podcast recently, Where is George Gibney? That has got global attention. So I think it just shows the importance, as he outline every week, Jim, in fairness, your introduction, support local media or support journalism, because it does reap the rewards when you do.
Yeah. Jim, I just ask about Pádraic. I know our listeners would be interested, and we are, in coming to understand how you got into journalism.
Mine was pretty immediate. After the Leaving Cert, I started with the Clare Herald, the online platform. Yeah. So yeah, that purely kind of came from a habit of studying and then not knowing what to do when you had a bit of free time. So I went straight into that, and had the pleasure of working with Mark Dunphy, who's now working in communications, and Mark was brilliant in that sense. And kind of when you go on the scene, or you burst onto the scene like that, I ended up with Clare FM pretty much straight away too. So then when I was in college, I was working with Wired FM, which is another community radio station. So I would, I value the importance of a community radio station like Scariff Bay from that. So
yeah, we had Ray Burke here.
Oh yes,
doing a, you know Ray. We yeah. had Ray doing a course yeah. a number yeah. of years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So that you know, I was kind of pretty much involved in radio for my college years as well, and then. A couple of weeks, or I had met Stuart Holly before I finished college, and then I started with them before I finished college, and they are nearly 3 or 4 years since. So it's busy.
What attracted you into the area of media?
I suppose there'd always been newspapers at home, and the radio would have always been on as well. So I was just pretty much interested in news and current affairs, and I suppose, Janice, I was pretty. Unusual in a sense that when I was very young, I maybe wasn't watching children's TV as much. I was watching reruns of the 95 All-Ireland or the 97 All-Ireland. So I've been attracted to different things maybe that other people wouldn't have been, and just maybe appreciative of history and stuff as well. So, no, it just purely came from, I suppose, a curiosity and kind of local government. So we'd be particularly active at county council level, but... yeah, it's just kind of come from family as well, that they'd always have a newspaper, so you'd be reading it, and then it just kind of stemmed from there.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you would have grown up, of course, in a very much a GAA household.
Very much a GAA house, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So there was always matches on and reports to be read and stuff.
Yeah, very good. Okay, we'll chat away. We'll have a look at some of the things. John S., you had a look at... on Pádraig's paper on page 2 on Raheen Hospital.
Well, it's a lovely story, in fact, that we can celebrate. A short article by Pádraig dealing with a £2 million investment in Raheen, extension to Raheen. No, Jim, the actual, this is not something which they're going to do. This is something which is currently happening. It will be in two phases. But the first phase under, I think it's Public Works, Custy Construction, are they the contractors, Pádraig?
That's correct.
Now, we're here in East Clare are exceptionally proud of Raheen. And I find, as I move on myself for years...
You've been checking it out a little bit more.
And anything we can say and do to enhance the development of Raheen, by golly, we'll do it, okay?
Yes.
But, I mean, my mother ended her final week of life in Raheen, and my God, what what a treatment. I'd be quite delighted to book my place sometime in the future. Mm-hmm. So congratulations again to the organising groups who are behind Raheen.
John, how old is Raheen Hospital?
The hospital itself?
Yeah, when was it established? Putting you on the spot now.
Yeah, well, you are, but of course I do a typical job like that, having fielded the ball, I get rid of it as quickly as possible. We came here in 1965. Okay. Raheen was well established at that stage.
Yes.
So I am going to guess, but there are listeners out there in the
who will correct us very quickly.
Absolutely. I would imagine Raheen as a hospital emerged around the late 1930s, I'd guess.
Yeah, yeah. Possibly. That would be, might get 30s or 40s is what I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Now, does that satisfy you? That
it does, but like an old building like that does require a fair bit of
it
effort.
Does.
And
yeah.
Pádraig here mentions the storeroom, or the stores. What are they? Are they outbuildings, or why did they call them the stores?
That's what they would be.
Oh, they will be stores. It says the demolition of the remainder of the stores building followed by the construction of the bedroom block. But sure, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's good news, isn't
but
it?
Very, very good news.
The original building that would have been there back in the 60s, mm-hmm. I mean, has been added to greatly since. So,
yeah, there's been a lot of extensions planted and a lot of work done over the years.
And it is gas like the number of fundraisers over the years, whether it's rugby or the equestrian world here in East Clare, various other things. It has been, very, very popular as a a name to generate funds for that in this community.
But there's a lovely culture there, Jim. Do you know?
There is,
to go
yes.
And chat.
It's a nice place. To
isn't it lovely?
It is.
So, onward.
Yeah, great to see that. I suppose we're staying with the Clare Echo and looking at page 8. We look at the social housing in Mount Shannon. David, you were having a look at that.
Yeah, this is Porrick's story as well. And this will, I think, surprise a lot of people. I think it surprised the councillors when they started asking this question, and perhaps even the council, who may have short memories. But it concerns Mount Shannon House. And Mount Shannon House is one of the oldest buildings in Mount Shannon. It was, as far as I know, built by the original landowner or his son, the person who established Mount Shannon. And for those of you who may not be familiar with it, there's a lovely picture here by John Mangan of the back of the house. I think it's a two-story Georgian, typical Georgian pile, with a bit of an extension. You can kind of see it from the road if you're coming up from Scariff and drive through Mount Shannon, and it's on there on the right, just past the main village itself. And 19 years ago, we have here the story, 19 years ago, the council and an organisation called Respond Voluntary Housing Association purchased Mount Shannon House as an option of accommodation for persons on Clare County Council social housing list. And the purchase was financed by a loan raised by the local authority. But that's kind of where it stopped, didn't it, Paul? Nothing has been done with it for the last 19 years. And I think it's Councillor Pat Burke here tabled a motion on the property at the March meeting of the Killaloe Municipal District requesting information on the council's interests in it. So it's obviously with Respond at the moment. They're responsible for the upkeep of it. What has been highlighted by Councillor Burke and others is that the house is looking a bit shoddy.
Yeah.
It is a protected structure, as far as I know. A house like that would always be. And so there is a legal responsibility on Respond to keep it in good condition. I suppose the council may have some obligation on it. The council is obliged to enforce the conservation laws.
And they provided some of the cash.
But they did.
Their original purchase.
Yeah, and the questions that are being asked by Councillor Hayes and others is, what's the council doing about it? Nothing has been done for 19 years. I mean, that's two decades.
Yeah.
Porrick says here there was hypocrisy evident from the council's perspective. Burke felt, we give out about private individuals who own properties such as Tulla, which are derelict. In this case, the council has an interest in the property, and it is shameful that it's lying idle.
Mm.
So it is a bit of a scandal, isn't it? It's a fine building. Something could be... Now, the part of the problem is, Pat, isn't it, that it's very hard to convert a building like this.
They have a meeting between the council and Respond took place in October 2019 to discuss proposals with regard to the future use of the property. Proposals were subsequently received for the development of 10 units of accommodation
within this one big building.
But further information was required. You wonder about 10 units inside the building like that.
Yeah. Now it is extensive. There's a big extension on it. But you would wonder how you can reconfigure a building like that. It would cost a fair bit of money. Mm-hmm.
Jim, I'm just wondering, Boring, when you go to write an article like this, mm-hmm. You're obviously going to try to be as objective as possible and unbiased.
Yes.
How do you, as a citizen, react to the article after you'd written it?
Well, I think David has summed it up, that it is a bit of a scandal. And it's pretty ironic there, as Pat kind of highlighted, that the agency is called Respond, but haven't responded to the council since October 2019. Like Pat Burke's point, I think, was very much on the money, that, you know, the council would be pretty vocal if a private landowner was not keeping their property up to scratch in the centre of an area. And then Mount Shannon House, fine structure of a building, and has been kind of left lie idle. And 19 years is far too long for it to be left.
Especially in the context of our housing crisis.
Is there much land, some property around the house?
I don't think so, but it is a prime site.
Is it not property? No.
Yeah, it's on the lake, isn't it, Jim? But what is surprising again is the director of service, Anne Hock, here acknowledged it was a significant legacy issue, which predates many of us.
Well, no.
So what the hell does that matter? It's a council structure, and if she is the director of service, we expect her to be fully up to date, whether it predates her or not.
But even on that, David, the questions were asked at that meeting in terms of how much of a loan is being paid, and the figures couldn't be provided, which is a bit of a worry.
That is a worry.
But in fair, I think what Director Hock was saying, that the property was purchased around 2002, and I think only one of the people at that meeting was actually involved in the, I think, what was the municipal district at the time.
So. But doesn't this, this is the importance of records, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Our councillors, when Councillor Burke asks this question, are the direct, is there any notice given, or are they just asked on the night without notice?
No, so Pat Burke would have submitted a motion there that would have went in at least 2 weeks in advance of the meeting. So, so a response would have been given from a council official.
So they had 2 weeks to find this information.
Exactly, yeah.
And they couldn't find it. That is a bit worrying, isn't it?
It is. I'm also concerned that it's smack in the middle of the East Clare, Killaloe district, the game, and there are 5 or 6 councillors that represent the area. They don't seem to have been kind of
fully aware of it.
And it underlines the need for politicians to be tuned absolutely, 100% to the vagaries that may arise within a constituency. Yeah. Well, Would you agree with that?
I'd say, to be fair to all the councillors, none of them were probably elected and just in the Killaloe area.
It predates them.
Well, I'll tell you, there's quite a few things that predate. Crusheen railway station might predate them as well, but they make a lot of noise about that. And I'm sure we'll be coming on to that soon. But I take John's point. If you were going into public service, whether it's in the civil service or in the council, you need to have knowledge of all of these things. How else can you do anything?
Or find out.
Or find out. Now, to be fair to Councillor Hayes, he's trying to find out.
Yes.
And hopefully this will put a little bit, light a little bit of a fire under...
Somebody.
It would be interesting, though, as Padraig said... Respond should respond to this very one would hope.
What's interesting, none of us knew anything about Respond.
No.
Mm. And Padraig, they're a national...
The other thing, I suppose, about this house, and David and John as historians, it has connections with Malahide Castle.
I know the actual...
And the
building at last.
The Talbot family.
Yes, the Talbots.
Talbot family.
Who owned Malahide up until
I remember my father, God be good to him, a long time ago, talking about Lady Talbot de Malahide.
Yeah.
Yes. And he talked about her as if he knew her, sure he didn't.
He did.
Malahide Castle. It was Malahide Castle had a part to play in James II's withdrawal from the Boyne.
You mean he retreated to Malahide?
And the lady of the day in the castle, okay? When she asked,
what did His Majesty do up in the Boyne?
Okay, they fled. And your Majesty seems to have won the race. So anyway, there we are.
Well, I must say, I go to, anytime I get to Dublin, which hasn't been for a good while now, but my daughter brings us out to Malahide Castle, to the Evoca shop there, and it's a lovely spot, really nice.
And of course it's under the Malahide Castle, isn't
it? I was just going to say,
under the
umbrella of Shannon Heritage.
That's right.
Yeah. So
which might lead us very quickly on I don't know, Jim,
go
if
on,
you want
yes.
to cover it. Shannon Group out of sync. And of course, Shannon Group includes Shannon Heritage. This is another story by Pádraig McMahon. Pádraig McMahon, I think, writes 50, 60, 70% of the paper, so he's famous.
He's prolific.
Every he's got a picture, you see, in all
what page
pages
are you on,
12, yes. page 12. It's a lovely picture there of Craganown. One of the attractions operated by Shannon Group. But the point is not really about Craganown at all. It is about the Chamber of Commerce. Shannon Chamber of Commerce organised a meeting recently, and they make the point that Shannon Group have been without a chairperson since Rose Hines's 12-month contract extension expired in August. And the elected representatives were present at this meeting organised by Shannon Chamber, and speaking at a briefing organised by Shannon Chamber to push for multi-annual financial support, Senator Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil, commended the Chamber for organising the session and went on to say, "For far too long the focus has been on the group and the success on its property portfolio and not on the airport keeping pace with the previous growth in tourism numbers and how it was beaten into third place by other airports. We now have an opportunity to get back on that ladder from an even base," he stated. So they're looking, Shannon Chamber are looking for multi-annual financial aid, in essence, until, I think, 2024, which is the date that they predict aviation will return to some sort of normal. Am I right in saying that, Pádraig?
Aviation will return to some form of normal if the vaccine proves to be effective. The worst case scenario is they'll be waiting until
2029.
That's the worst case scenario.
If the vaccine
doesn't work or function, or customer confidence doesn't come back in time. So they've all their hopes really pinned on the vaccine.
Yeah, haven't we all?
Yeah.
But it's out of sync anyway, whatever that means, according to Timmy Dooley.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about the idea of an annual, as Kevin Thompson, is it Kevin that said it?
Yeah.
About the actual subsidy for the airport, even to carry it as far as 29. What about, David, you have a problem about that thinking, haven't you?
No, I don't.
You had last week.
Last week it was to a private company.
Poor people are pushing.
But you've been,
I know,
you're,
I'm going to be crushed by crushing.
No, you're quite entitled to have a very.
No, I have no problem with the airport getting the money.
None.
Not so much. If my taxes, if all our taxes are gone, how much have we borrowed? It came out this week in the national papers. I think we're up at 36 billion, 34 billion for COVID alone.
Indeed.
Now, I don't know how much we borrowed to bail out the banks, but we're heading up there anyway.
Oh, indeed we are. Yeah.
Now, you're all right. John, you're facing...
I'm on the way
you're
out.
You're facing Raheem. You're not paying any taxes, but myself and Pádraig will be paying a lot more until we get to Raheem. And it might bring us to Raheem earlier.
Well said, though, indeed. Yeah.
Could we not print some money?
MacWilliams would print our own.
He would, I'm thinking of David MacWilliams.
Yeah.
My reckoning is, okay, if we printed money, if Ireland, I know Ireland can't print money now, but if one country prints money like Germany did between the wars, then inflation goes through the roof and the money. But if everyone prints a bit, But anyway. Okay, listen, we'll go on a small bit. Pat. You were looking at a commemoration there in the Clare Champion on page 7, is it?
Yeah, there's East Clare commemorations by order of the Peaky Blinders. This Sunday, the East Clare Memorial Committee will honour Father Sean Clancy, who in the War of Independence stood with his parishioners and Scarab. Historian Dr. Thomas McConmore reflects on his story and its connection to the famous British crime drama. In season 5 of Peaky Blinders, the main antagonist is a British politician called Oswald Mosley. It is in the late 1920s, and Mosley converts Mosley's conduct plans for a fascist revolution have been noted at the upper echelons of British power. Thomas Shelby, played by Cillian Murphy, has been approached by Winston Churchill to eliminate an increasingly influential Mosley. This particular dramatization of real historical figures connects to a global television phenomenon to East Clare in 1921. In May of that year, 25-year-old MP Mosley spoke at length about the town of Scariff in the British House of Commons. He outlined reports that the local Catholic priest, Father Clancy, had been denied the right to celebrate Mass for his parishioners. At approximately 10:30 a.m. on Sunday, April 24, 1921, Father Clancy was walking through Scariff when he was held up by British auxiliaries who had arrived from Killaloe and began rounding up local men. Father Clancy, who was born in Coolmean in 1891 and was a brother of Father Clancy, commander of the West Clare IRA. Most importantly, he was accused of Scariff, and the previous November officiated at the funeral of the Scariff martyrs, whom British forces had shot dead in the Bridge of Killaloe. Father Clancy, who had been identified as sympathetic to the Republican approach, as sympathetic to the Republicans, approached the colonel in charge and proclaimed that he had not been allowed to celebrate Mass. The response, which Father Clancy later characterized as sarcastic, was too bad. Father Clancy was then marched with other men to the local church, where, despite his repeated protests, he had only until 12 p.m. to perform the Catholic rite. He was prevented from saying Mass. Instead, he was taken 2 miles outside Scariff, where Colonel Hemming declared Father Clancy would see some good work of his parishioners can do and some bad work others can do. The men were made to repair the roads that had been damaged by the East IRA to impede British movements.
That, do you know where that damaged road was?
I don't know. No.
It's Alley Bridge, up above.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, up there.
The Ball Alley Bridge.
The Ball Alley Bridge.
Above Clonuskirk.
Exactly, oh, yeah. Mm. And it's a good story.
It's a nice story, yeah.
It's a very nice story. Mm. It's well remembered in the folk memory of the Scariff people of that particular Sunday morning, okay? And there's always a debate about whether Father Clancy was kicked up onto the lorry or whether he went voluntarily, as we saw in the House of Commons, the interpretation which
the chief secretary claimed instead that the young priest had chosen to accompany his flock.
That cut them off the hook. But yes. the lads had blown up, you see, the bridge.
Which, yeah.
And so I think there were about 20 of them. Tomás would have been talking about this now.
Yesterday.
Yesterday,
yeah.
He'd been talking about it on yesterday. Yeah. I think he's incorporated it in some reference to it in his proposed book, which is...
Yeah, it's coming out. Yeah.
When is it coming out?
September.
In September.
September, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few connections, actually, with Mosley. Mosley is the British black-shirt fascist. That's your people may recall the pictures, and I think he might have been imprisoned during the Second World War. But after the Second World War, he came to the west of Ireland and lived in the old Bishop's Palace of Clonfert.
Really?
So, and lived in the 50s and 60s. 50s, anyway, definitely. I think he kind of liked Ireland.
Did he stay kind of quiet when he came to Clonfert?
Yes, he did. He did. Well, I wasn't around in the 50s, and I wouldn't have been like James's father being invited by the Talbots. I'm sure they would have had a few guests around.
Well, I remember I'd say it was in the 60s. Now I was very young,
yes.
And Oswald Mosley made a guest appearance on the Late Late Show.
Really?
And Gay Byrne introduced him.
Yeah.
And the bile and the vitriol that came up from the audience.
Really?
And I mean, I remember thinking, oh, he's a young fella, like, genius, what has this fella done? But very angry people in the audience,
yeah.
talking to Oswald Mosley. But I mean, I didn't know anything about him at the time. But later on, you'd find out. But his son Max Mosley is the CEO of Formula One.
Yes. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm not sure whether he still is now, but yeah. he certainly was.
Jim, I forgot that when we were talking about Monchan and Lady Talbot, Scarif has a very good connection with the last Lady Talbot, Mrs. Keenan, mother to the, our good friends, the Keenan families here in Scarif. Mrs. Keenan worked all her life until she got married. For Lady Talbot
in Malahide. Pat,
just on that subject, like in the East Clare Memorial Committee will lay a wreath in honour of Father Clancy this weekend in a private ceremony in line with COVID-19 restrictions. The Scarif Martyrs War Mother and Memory in East Clare by Thomas McNamara will be published by Mercer Press in September 2021.
Yep. Pat, you have a little bit of music for us. You're going to, I mean, Pat is our resident DJ here on this panel and expert at all things, but resident DJ as well.
Emily Harris, she's 74 on Friday last, so we'll have saved the last dance for me from Emily Harris. And we can tie that in with the Astor Cinema.
Okay. You're very welcome back. You're listening to Local Media This Week on Scariff Bay Community Radio. And there you heard Emmylou Harris and Save the Last Dance for Me. And we were just talking about it during the break there. Pat O'Brien and myself looking across at each other, socially distanced, but remembering the Astor Cinema in Scariff. In an era, to answer David's question, which he posed during the break, you know, there was nothing untoward going on. There was no sex in the 1960s or anything like that. But
isn't that when sex started in the 1960s?
Well, it was the Late Late Show that started sex
not
in Ireland.
Not the Astor Cinema.
And it was the result of an imprint Mosley left on Clonfert. It was on the Bishop of Clonfert that actually introduced the topic of the famous 90.
But Pat, you remember the Astor in Scariff.
Why do we? Yeah.
As a place to go.
Yeah, it was a fabulous place to spend. It was on a Sunday night, and it was a lovely place.
Busloads came from all over the place.
Yeah, there was busloads coming in every Sunday night.
I remember buses parked, you know, side by side in the green in Scariff on a Sunday evening.
You had the cinema in, I'd say, on the Friday night, or maybe the. And you had the festival, the drama festival was there for years. So.
Now, what sort of stuff were you getting up to, Pat?
Well, we were dancing anyway. We weren't getting up dancing too much.
There was a time when they'd have the dance in the hall, and they'd have a ceilidh outside.
Yeah, yeah.
In the, we'd say there were tennis courts there, which they're still there at the back of the Astor.
In the back.
But the reason I bring it up was not to be nostalgic, Pat, or anything, but it features in the Clare Champion on page 6. Page 4.
Page 4, yes. A rural plan offers hope of Scariff Cinema rejuvenation. Potential for the development of a multi-use venue at the heart of Scariff has been identified by community activists who is advocating for the refurbishment of the old Astor Cinema on the town's main street. Owen O'Hagan, a former chair of Chosen East Clare and part of Scariff Bay Community Radio as well, said that the launch this week of the government's new 5-year rural development plan offered an opportunity to focus on revitalising properties in key locations to bring them back into the community use. Mr. O'Hagan believes the venue which was in use as a cinema from the late 40s to the end of the 60s has potential to be redeveloped into a flexible venue for remote working, museum, gallery, cafe, cinema, theatre, youth club, dance hall, community centre. I suppose it's a good idea if it worked out.
I remember a couple of years ago, we go to Westport in our town, and there was a place very like the Astor Cinema up there, and it had been turned into a lovely hall, like the theatre, with cafe and shops and various things like that inside it.
Just right into central tones.
Right, yeah, it is.
And in a sense, unless something happens, it's a bit of an eyesore, isn't it, really?
It is. Mm. Yeah. It's a lovely building. It's a unique building of its time. It dates from the 1940s. It's this concrete, the type of thing you'd see in America, actually, of the time. So it's evocative.
It is.
I'd love to see something done, but it's not the first time that proposals have been brought out, have they? Like I'm looking here at an extract from a very old newspaper from 1977, where it's up for sale, the Astor Cinema and Ballroom, suitable for light manufacturing. So they're thinking, right? Can we reuse this? I know, John. We spoke before the program started about the various plans that have come up every now and again for its reuse. What do you think is the major hindrance?
I think when Jim mentioned one, which is worth repeating again, I think, and that is the narrowness of the bowway, as we call it. That would be as you face the front facade; it's on the right hand side between the building and Ted's
fruit shop.
That's one huge problem.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the second one now actually may prove to be helpful to Owen's idea, and that is the County Council's proposal for housing at the back onto the Fecal Road.
Yes.
You know that beside the Mart.
Yes.
Now, the council will have a planning permission.
I mean, this is another story.
It is actually, it's a continuation of it,
if
you think about it.
But this idea, John, that the government have produced this week for revitalising rural areas, the creation of hubs in places like pubs, could this be a hub for people to come to avail of printing and as an office space? And
there's a massive potential for... that's been one of the consequences, in my opinion, from COVID-19 is the potential for remote working. Yeah. But to digress slightly from your question, David, I'm hearing Astor Cinema and all I'm hearing in one ear is AstraZeneca. I think it must be what's on the brain with COVID-19 vaccines. Yeah. It's very familiar. But if I could throw a question to Jim or Pat, you mentioned dancing. I was wondering who was more proficient at the hookable.
Now, there's a question, Porrick. I'd love to know that as well.
You know, and Porrick, we forgot to ask Pat what I think would have been a crucial question at the time he spoke of. The importance of having a car, Pat, now, as against driving by bus. You know, where did that put you in the order of things inside at the dance?
Well, I think I was in the bus most of the time.
When you actually moved on to the next level.
Well, the car would be useful, you know, like, yeah.
Oh, it would be more than useful.
You didn't abide by, in terms of driving to it, you didn't abide by any laws in relation to how many would be in the back seat or how many would be in the front. Isn't that right?
There would be a substantial amount in the car. Yeah.
So was your status in the dancing culture heightened as a result of having a car?
Well,
coming to the Astor to scarf.
It would be an advantage, all right, John.
Yeah. It didn't matter whether you were good or bad at the hucklebuck.
No, it didn't.
No.
The car might have. Jim, did you have a car?
I did not have a car, but I looked longingly at people who did have a car.
Jim.
But I would say that, you know, going to the disco, or going, not there weren't discos, going to the dance, where you could fill the car and you would be very popular if you did have a car. Yeah. But then if you...
Why would you be popular? Did you ever analyse that?
No, loads of people would want to go to the... Marquee or dance or whatever.
For a lift, but
if you were successful
with a nice girl,
yeah. Then
what do you mean successful with a nice girl? What does that mean?
The load you had coming to the dance would have to find their own way home.
That's what I was wondering about. That was.
You mean she took the offer of a mineral
and a lift.
For a shift.
Anyway, we're talking about we had been talking about the Astor, and just to close on the Astor, I was talking to a man during the week who would know, and he tells me that the inside of both the hotel and the Astor, who are owned by the one person, are in great shape and have been There has been upkeep and heating and everything. So
that's good news.
That's good to know.
Well, the Astor, there was lovely. There was actually lovely drapes and all, when the drama was on there. No, it was a real theatre.
Could I just put it out before you leave it?
And you had a balcony. You had a balcony and all for people. You know, you could stay up in the balcony and you were down the floor.
Could it not still be a nice cinema stroke? Theatre, stroke, ballroom, whatever you want. Could we not see a cinema in these?
Well, the upstairs was actually, maybe 10, 15 years ago, the upstairs, the balcony was cut off to a degree from the rest of it and turned into a cinema.
Yeah.
So you could. I went to a number of movies there.
The Film Society, the Antrim.
That's right.
Midnight Court Film Society.
And Liam Dowling, I think, was in charge of it at the time.
And I wonder, will COVID-19 would it shift people's, like, would it dilute the impact of a cinema or the need for a cinema? Because I think more people have maybe subscribed to, like, see your Netflix. Like, I'm wondering, could there be a better use for that facility?
Yes, and I mean the. We'll say the cinema now would be only a very small part of the facility as it stands at the moment. But I
will tell you just before Porrig leaves that point, once you have children, Porrig, you may have children, you'd be dying to get away from Netflix. They're the ones watching Netflix. You need to get out of the house, and the cinema is often a good excuse to leave the house.
Porrig, can I turn to you again? Is there any particular piece or article that you have in the paper this week that that resonates with you in particular? It doesn't have to be about East Clare.
Well, I'll touch on one, and I think Pat's going to follow up. It's just on human interest kind of stories, and I just, we as reporters and journalists, and I know you're the same when you've someone in and they tell their story, you kind of, you have to commend them. And there's just one example here on page 12 from Marie Donlan. She's a former Rose of Clare. But it's basically, she's started a new voluntary venture called Live What You Love, and it's about promoting the best of Irish and, you know, Irish brands, because she's spoken here that the likes of Amazon and these big companies, when you go on Google to buy online, they're the first. And we don't maybe hear about the Wild Irish Chocolates or, you know, the East Clare business or the West Clare business. So she's trying to plug them in this voluntary venture. But she says the reasons that have promoted her or prompted her to do it, number one is that the frustration with seeing the Amazons. But number two was last October, Marie and her husband William unfortunately lost their baby after 10 days. So it was, it kind of forced her to take a step back and see what was important in life, because as she says, she had a lovely job, a lovely car, a lovely house, but unfortunately they only had baby Catherine for 10 days. So I think it's, you know, you'd have to commend Marie for how she has responded to that grief. And it also follows on from a story Owen Ryan and myself had last week with Donna McGettigan, who last week, the Shannon councillor for Sinn Féin, she got married last July and her husband died from pancreatic cancer in March. So two key milestones in her life. She didn't have more than 25 people at either the wedding or the funeral. So I think, you know, and Marie as well is another example. You know, a very difficult time in her life in October, you know, to lose her what would have been her first child, and hadn't really the people around her to get her through it. And I think she really should be applauded for how she has kind of turned it around and has created this venture.
Yes.
That's marvellous, yeah.
Absolutely. And at the very end, Porrig has here, she is eager to feature Clare businesses on the website that she's established to be featured. And just for the listeners, if the address is livewhatyoulove.ie, all the one word, livewhatyoulove.ie.
Okay.
Just a related article here, Jim, on page 4 of the Club Champion. Christy Donlan at home in Tully with a photograph of her daughter, Scarlett, in her Gabe's dress. Selfless Scarlett's donation leaves amazing legacy of 5 lives saved. A Clare mother of 3 has revealed how the donation of her daughter's organs has saved the lives of 5 people. Scarlett Feely, 17, saved 5 men's lives after her passing, donating her heart, kidneys, liver, and lungs, and pancreas. One man received a kidney, another received the other kidney and pancreas, another got her liver, and a man received her heart, and last recipient, her lungs. Scarlett died tragically as a result of head injury sustained in a night out in September 2018. Having completed her leaving certificate in St. Joseph's Secondary School, Tullow, she was at the start of the year out working away on some money, planning her next move. Her mother, Christy Dannon, recalled a month before Scarlett died, she asked where she could get a donor card. I will never forget that conversation. I said, I think I have seen them in the post office. The next time I am there, I will have a look and pick one up. Scarlett, a healthy lifestyle, was anti-drugs and smoking, only consumed alcohol occasionally. She loved nature and walking the family dog. So yes, what she's promoting here is really is that people should get a donor card. Yes. And have a donor card. And, you know, I suppose if somebody is unfortunate to lose their life or to get killed or something like that, that somebody else might benefit from there.
And I think that Dan's story ties in well because it is Organ Awareness Week this week, and I know Scarlett was a native of Newmarket and Fergus and can still remember the time of her death. And, you know, I think the likes of the family coming out there and Marie, it's, you know, we often, the reference point for a lot of people in terms of interviews like that is Nuala Ní Fhéile on with Marion Finucane. I think people, they can see the good there from Marie and the Feely family, what can be done by actually telling the story and the amount of people it can help. And you know, that because sometimes there is reluctance, I mightn't trust the paper or the radio, but it can really help a lot of people, is the message that needs to be put out there.
Is it, should we not have, instead of an opt-in system for organ donation, that it is taken as a matter of course that if unfortunately an accident happens and a person dies, that the organs are automatically donated?
What I would do we think about it? 100% on that.
Yeah. Why do we think that we don't have that system as other countries have? What is it?
Well, interestingly enough, Dave, because I can't speak for everyone, but I'd be an organ donor. But you know, when I signed up to it, there was very little. I was kind of half guessing. Am I signed up for it? There was, you know, in the communication with the organisation responsible, it was just you got sent a card, and it was kind of, that's it.
Well, I just have a card in my wallet. I didn't actually actively sign up. Yeah. I just have the card and hope that if, God forbid, I was in an accident, somebody would look through my wallet and find it.
But like, I was just wondering, through that system, because it's much more smoother in the US, for example, but, you know, if they don't find my wallet or your wallet, what happens?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it is, time is of the essence in those scenarios. So I wonder, maybe that's something I have to look into myself, but just the whole system.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim, It is Easter time. Did you get an Easter egg today?
No.
Jim.
Did you ever wonder? We had a quiz last. Do you remember? So I said I pose a little quiz for the five of you this afternoon.
I didn't get an egg, Janice, an Easter egg, but I did get an egg from Melody Eggs.
Did you? We come. But the chocolate egg, the origin of the Easter egg.
Yes.
For a prize of a fine big Easter egg, okay?
No,
I didn't say that right. Can anybody tell me where did it all begin?
I'd like to guess someplace like Russia, but I'm probably wrong because they had certainly the Romanovs for Fabergé.
Oh, Fabergé, very much, yeah. No, we won't be giving you a Fabergé. any other attempt?
No. We're waiting, John, with bated breath.
It seems that in the early 19th century, Lindt.
Oh, the Swiss chocolatiers.
But it was the Lutherans in Germany who had a tradition of the Easter hare. Okay? And the hare was meant to go fluttering around the garden to find which child was, has been very good all year. And the child, as a reward for being good, a bit like Santa Claus, got
a chocolate.
When the Germans went to America, the Americans changed it from the hare
to the
bunny rabbit.
Yes.
So there you are. And then there is the John Cadbury. Who has eaten a Cadbury chocolate? Or a bar of chocolate in the last month. Yeah.
Well, you have, John, anyway.
I have, yeah. Two hands up, actually. I'm honest about it. Cadbury, John Powell, he was a Quaker. And he started selling drinking chocolate. And then he made a bar. and he was in competition with that lovely Fry's bar.
I wouldn't be a Fry's man now, I'd be a Cadbury's man.
Yeah, but Cadbury's eventually take over Fry, didn't they? So, anyway, here's the thing about dark chocolate. And
it's supposed to be better for you, isn't it?
Good for your blood pressure, think of that now. Good for your blood flow. An antioxidant. Makes you smarter. And it enhances the quality of your facial skin.
Oh, God.
Now, gentlemen, I think John now has eaten an awful lot of chocolate and is trying to justify himself.
I ate 6 Cadbury chocolates last night and I'm sick.
I'm sort of hoping now maybe when I go home after this program that I might get an Easter egg before the day is out.
There you are.
Okay, just a couple of things because time is running short. Pat, could you take us very quickly through the East Clare page in the Clare Champion?
First, there was a few stories in the East Clare page in the Clare Champion, Fiona McGarry and Dan Downer reporting on it. Fiona, as a scientist, leads charge to reform plastic. I think we were told this article before with Dr. Elvin O'Big White, who works in Swansea University. He's pioneering technology to change the waste plastic into available compounds for the energy industry, reducing plastic pollution in the process. So I think we talked about that before, so there's, yes, there's a good article there on it. And then there's another one here from Fiona McGarry. The boom is back for the road funding in the east of the county.
I see Bertie Ahern and Alan O'Callaghan are shoulder to shoulder there. Yes.
Bosom buddies.
Bertie Ahern era allocation welcome, the district still playing catch up due to years of underspend. So you'll probably have a dual carriage way passing your door there, David. So they seem to have a good bit of money got from the, which is good for the Killaloe Municipal District anyway.
Yeah.
In for the coming year. So then you have Scarab housing proposal hit snag. A 3.9 million social housing development for Scarab has hit a snag after questions were raised over its proposed density by the Department of Housing. Councillor Pat Box sought an update on the status of the project at the recent meeting of the Killaloe Municipal District. Director of Services Anne Hawk, who also heads up the social development department, outlined the current situation with the planned development at Ballymanogue.
That's on the Beagle Road.
Yeah, they have questions about the density of the houses. And then
maybe they could reduce the density by putting an opening up to the back of the cinema.
And then,
okay, we're nearly the yes part.
Call to tackle antisocial behaviour and illegal dumping at popular beauty spot. Fiona McGarry is this again. East Clare councillor has branded as disgraceful and outrageous the situation at the Trevor Clark Hills in terms of illegal dumping and antisocial behaviour. Councillor Joe Cooney made his comments at a recent meeting on the Killaloe Municipal District when he called for a barrier to be erected to address issues including fly tipping, theft, bike scrambling, and other unauthorised and illegal activities in the area. The Fine Gael member proposed that the barrier might be put in place on the link road between Torpy Hurley's and the R471 at Oakfield Church. He stressed that it would be done after consultation with householders, landowners and the Trevor Clark Hills Committee and Quilter. There's a major issue with unlawful dumping and antisocial behaviour, he said. So I think the council said that there's a right of way in it, so they can't put a barrier and they have to have more discussions on it.
Okay. Can I go to Porrick just before we finish? Our listeners in Tullow would be delighted with the Clare Echo this week, Porrick.
Yeah, no.
A major expose on Tullow,
and we're delighted to feature Tullow in such a way. And I suppose I'll give you an exclusive that didn't make the paper.
Oh.
I did put a question to Senator Timmy Dooley as part of it to say, because of recent developments in Tullow, and it's on a bit of a surge, should it take the title of East Clare Capital from Scariff?
Ooh.
Oh.
And what did he say?
The politician dodged the question.
we won't dodge the question.
Okay. We're running out of time, I would say. Pat, have you a piece of music for us to close the show?
We'll have this Scottish woman, Susan Byle, she's 60 on Thursday, the 1st of April, and we'll have Hallelujah.
Lovely. Okay, so that's the end. Thank you very much for listening today. to local media this week here on Scariff Bay Community Radio. My thanks to John S, to Pat, and to David, and hopefully we'll see you again next week. Special thank you to Pádraic McMahon, who joined us today live in here in the studio, or in the GA building. We're delighted to have you, Pádraic.
I'm delighted to be here, Jim.
Hopefully it won't be the last time you'll be out here.
Of course. Well, as Pat pointed out, the roads are on the up, so yeah. We'll be able to make a few more visits.
Okay, thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you again next Sunday. Goodbye. God bless.
Please the Lord, but you don't know.